Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Gen Lounge. My name's Neil. That's Vince.
Your energy is entirely too high for me right now.
While we get Vince some coffee, I'm pumped up because we are back. We've had some turbulence, but we are back. We're talking video games. One of our favorite series just launched a new title, which is amazing. But first, we're going to run through some news for you guys because we decided in 2023 for game industry news, let's do some news. Vince, what do you got?
Well, okay. So Hogwarts Legacy came out. Huge amounts of controversy covering that because there was a failed boycott of the game, I suppose, that pretty much only existed online for whatever reason. And for the most part, you can buy whatever you want. That's perfectly fine. Enjoy whatever you like. I'm not going to be touching the game because I'm a middle-aged man who doesn't like Harry Potter, and apparently the game is full of spiders. I guess in other recent release news, they also had Metroid Prime Remastered come out, a 20-year-old game, which means that Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to mess with it soon, but it still looks just as good now as it did way back in the day. It plays amazingly with these new, like, dual-stick control schemes. And outside of the doors being a little messed up because they accidentally had, like, the alpha map on top of where it's supposed to be, it looks great. It looks phenomenal. I think it's just as good now as what it was back then. It was a revolutionary game at the time, and it has stayed fantastic. And let's see, what else we got? A popular, like, gaming channel on YouTube, Neebs Gaming, had one of its members pass away over the course of the last week. Thick44, also known as Tony Schnurr, passed away due to complications from a brain tumor. And I don't really watch people play video games very much, but this group had a fantastic dynamic, and Thick was one of those great people who would instigate a lot of the arguments that made the channel worth watching. And they're going to continue on doing what they normally do, but he was an incredible part of that particular team. And from what I understand, they had a GoFundMe for his medical bills, and anything related to that is now going to be sent to his daughters who are surviving him. So I don't know how many listeners this might have, but if someone might want to check that out, again, the channel is Neebs Gaming, and they should have all of that stuff plastered all over the place. That's about all I've got news-related. I know that there have been a few more releases in the last few weeks, but I imagine that you also have, like, a news article or two, don't you, buddy?
I do, and we actually have a zombie company. Telltale Games is apparently back.
Really?
Telltale apparently was relaunched in 2019 by a different company, and they just had a Series A funding led by a capital firm that raised $8 million. Telltale, the new CEO, is alleging that they're going to have a stable, non-crunch work environment. So I think it'll be interesting to see what Telltale can do, and if their games are still in demand, because I know that you had the Walking Dead ones, but then after that, they were a mixed bag. So it looks like we should be able to see some of more of their games coming soon. Nothing has been announced at the moment other than they just received a bunch of funding.
Well, that's interesting. That was not a company I expected to hear about again.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Tales of the Borderlands since Valve, or not Valve.
Gearbox
took that back. I don't know if Telltale is going to try to claw those back. That's for lawyers to decide, not me.
Yeah, and the latest Tales from the Borderlands wasn't exactly very good. I don't know. It didn't grip me the way that the first one did. The humor wasn't really hitting the mark with me, so I kind of never finished it.
I feel like Gearbox is really having a tough go at it lately, because I remember in my column where I did a game, I wrote for the website, for games of the year, I put Tiny Tina's as my most disappointing. After playing Assault on Dragon's Keep and going through the overarching story of dealing with loss, but also the nudge, nudge, wink, wink humor at pop culture and gaming references. And it was well done. And then to play Tiny Tina's, where the humor was very dull, the jokes very flat, even established characters like Mr. Torg just weren't the same. It almost feels like the writers weren't allowed to talk to each other or play previous games. And it's such a long departure from Borderlands 2. I mean, even Borderlands 3, like, there were some funny chuckle moments. Tiny Tina, like, I played most of it. I'm just like, this can't be Gearbox. These can't be the same writers.
Well, they're not the same writers. Borderlands 2 had, I don't remember if he was the lead writer or whatever, but I don't know if you ever watched Hey Ash, What You Playin' with Ashley Burch, but her brother, which the reason why I introduced him as the brother of Ashley Burch is because I can't remember his name off the top of my head, Burch, unfortunately. Isn't it? That doesn't sound familiar to me. I have no idea. I'm sorry. But that guy was the writer for Borderlands 2, and I don't think it's unrelated that after his departure from the company, the writing became a ton more hit or miss. I have no idea what he might be up to at this particular moment in time. Maybe Borderlands 2 was just an incredible kind of lightning in a bottle situation for Gearbox. But they had a lot of people leave between 2 and 3. And I'm not exactly sure that the writers who were participating in 2 were still the same ones who were writing in 3 and Tiny Tina's Wonderlands.
I just looked it up. It's Anthony Birch.
Anthony.
Yeah, but I mean, even for me, like, it was shocking even from 3 because, yeah, 3 made... We always go back to Borderlands 2 as like the crowning masterpiece because Handsome Jack was great. The writing was fun. But even from Borderlands 3, like, Zane had its fun moments, his fun moments. Moe's had her fun moments.
And yeah, Moe's was phenomenal.
All of that was just... There was no trace of Borderlands adjacent in Tiny Tina's.
Like, well, and like, 3 had a lot of bad moments too. Like,
it did.
They tried to replicate what happened with Roland with Maya, and they did not do anywhere near as good of a job. I don't know. They tried. They had a lot of misses when it came to that. But yeah, Wonderlands had a lack of an identity. It's like they had the idea laid out before them and they're like, oh, this is a fantastic idea to just have an entire game that's set in the Bunkers and Badasses setting. But then they had nothing more to work with outside of that for whatever reason.
Yeah, and even though they got a great voice cast, the characters just felt flat. I mean, they got Wanda Sykes, Andy Samberg, and I don't feel like they added anything to the game. The characters, because it was create your own character, they couldn't do unique stuff, as like they can't build like a Zane personality because, you know, it's build your own. So it's just all these generic lines over and over and over. And and maybe that's on me, but I just expected so much more out of it. But yeah, if Gearbox keeps, having issues, I don't know how much longer Borderlands is going to go before it gets shelved.
Well, apparently Tiny Tina's did well enough that I'm not imagining they're going to shelf it after this one game that didn't review like spectacularly well. It's a difficult thing to look at the writing between the two major games of the series, like 2 and 3, and then going from 3 to Tiny Tina's. But I think you're right a little bit on how most of the characterization in 3 was done through the protagonists you played as. Because you would get way more entertaining lines playing as Moe's than you would playing as Amara, for example. Like, Amara's lines were all like, oh, I have something to prove. Because, you know, she's just so much of a badass. And while I love Amara as a character, and she's my favorite siren in the series, I like her more than playing Lilith in 1. And Lilith in 1 was broken. But when you play as Moe's, you get all of these great lines, like even references to really old jokes, like, you know, in Soviet Russia, blank does blank.
Yeah, nothing like Yakov Smirnoff for a classic win.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they did a great job with the characterization for her. Flack was entertaining. Zane was phenomenal.
Death comes for us all, but you first.
Exactly. Like, he was a cocky character with self-awareness. Fantastic. And then you have Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, where they didn't exactly do that because they'd have to base it, like, by class, I imagine. And I'm assuming they did something of that extent. They did the whole, like, class mixing thing, too. So, what characterization are you really going to have?
Yeah, I think for me, like, what really was off-putting for that was when I saw Mr. Torg, I was excited. Because I think Mr. Torg is low-key one of the most hilarious characters in the series. And even though it was the same voice actor, he didn't feel like Mr. Torg. He felt like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it wasn't the same, which was really disappointing, because especially when you've played, what's the DLC with Mr. Torg?
The one where he's like, that sentence had too many syllables. Apologize.
Yeah, and where he says, this battle reminds me of my dad. Alcoholism ruins families. And it was just...
I think it was Mr. Torg's Campaign of Carnage?
Yep, that's it. It was so enlightening because you learned so much about him, but like he also had some really... just really pure funny moments. Like whenever he says that he's not allowed to curse and they have a censor box and he goes on a rant and it's like bleeping every other word on it. It's endearing. And because a lot of us have had days like that and we have those moments, but that was just gone. Like Tiny Tina felt like the soul of Borderlands got sucked out of the game.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't think I finished Wonderlands, actually. I barely got into it. I bought it and I didn't finish it, actually. I need to go back and do that. I have no idea what stopped me. I think I bought it around it came to Steam, I think, around the same time as Xenoblade 3, maybe. And I dropped everything to play Xenoblade 3. Maybe that's why.
Honestly, I thought it came out near Elden Ring.
Ooh, I would have dropped everything to play Elden Ring, too. I have no idea. When did that come to Steam?
So, with our... that's some of the basic news we have right now. I do want to get to our main story, though, because when Vince and I had this game marked on our calendar for a very long time, Fire Emblem Engage came out. And I was excited, especially... because it kind of went back to the old formula. Because don't get me wrong, Three Houses had its merits. But I had a lot of issues with it too. With the story, with the constant e-breaking the story to go do anime school fun time. And
yeah, the monastery, Jesus.
And like it was fine until like after the time skip. Then it's like, why am I still doing this?
Yeah, no matter what path you're on, you're taking big breaks to do some kind of educational thing. Even on the Crimson Flower route, where for a while you're not even at the monastery. Like, it winds up becoming a tremendous expenditure of time because all of your characters are effectively blank slates for you to work with. And you have to take advantage of that system if you want to make them as good as they can be. So if you ignore the monastery, you're doing a challenge run. And no one cares if you do a challenge run in order to make the game more interesting or, I guess, less time-consuming. Whereas in Engage, they still have things kind of like the monastery. Like, there's some mini-games that you can do. Like, your protagonist can exercise in between map challenges, and that'll give you a small stat bonus that you can carry into the next battle. So if you do push-ups, it might raise your strength or, you know, whatever. You can have a character prepare meals that might give you stat bonuses too. Might give your entire group stat bonuses, might just give additional bonuses to the Divine Dragon. Who knows? I guess it kind of depends on what meal you make and which character is actually the one cooking at the time, which some of them can be terrible at cooking. I discovered you can get an E rank because they burnt a fruit platter, which isn't supposed to be cooked. I specifically looked up the dish because I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is just a platter of fruit on a tray. That's all it is. And yes, they burnt it, gave me an E rank, made me lose stats for the next battle. That was funny. That was funny to do on maddening mode. So after that, I actually looked up what recipes do what, because that was important to me after losing 2 strength on all of my characters.
I know the one thing that we saw, and it kind of threw us for a loop, because we've been playing Fire Emblems for many, many years. Like, my first one was Sacred Stones on Game Boy Advance when I was when I was still in high school.
You might be hearing a cat in the background. That's Toby, the official cat of Game Industry News, and I'm going to try to mute my microphone while you're speaking. Sorry about that.
So for the story that threw us for a loop was seeing a lot of these game review outlets, who we are not going to name yet, that were saying the game has got Fire Emblem's gone downhill, that the story is not as good, that they actually, one reviewer posted that they wanted the game to be nothing but the monastery sections from Fire Emblem Three Houses. And they essentially wanted it to be Persona, which it's not Persona, it's Fire Emblem. That's why these games have 2 separate titles. And they were confused that, why is this tactical RPG making me do all this tactical RPG stuff? And it's mildly infuriating, because Fire Emblem, for the most part, has never had a good story. You don't play Fire Emblem for the story. The story is literally the broken down 700 or the barely running $700 Nissan you have that gets you from point A to point B, where you get to fight things. And even Three Houses was not good storytelling.
Yeah, it was epic for the sake of being epic for the most part, because there were a lot of plot holes, and those plot holes make, I think, both of us look back on the story a lot more negatively, because we played more than one route and still had questions about how certain things work.
It's never a good sign when you play 2 or 3 playthroughs and you're like, okay, who are the main bad guys again?
Especially, oh, I absolutely hate that.
By all means, tell us, Vince.
Well, I found it frustrating because the first time I had beaten the game and tried speaking with a friend of mine about it, I played through Crimson Flower's route, and then I played through the entirety of, what is it called, Verdant Wind? I think that's the Golden Deer route. So I played through all of both of those routes, and then I tried talking with a friend of mine about it, because I'm like, oh yeah, there's like Cyrillic on the walls in Shambhala, and you fight against the Agarthans. And he had no idea what the hell an Agarthan even was, because he played the Blue Lions route, which, after playing it myself, I understand it's a very nice self-contained story, but Dimitri makes no sense. There's absolutely no reason for him to blame just Edelgard for the tragedy of Dusker when he knew she was like 7 years old at the time. That's insanely stupid. What the hell? But then on top of that, it has no connection to the overarching bad guys of the entirety of the plot. Nemesis and the Agarthans are the bad guys. If you have no connection to, like, Rhea and her entire race with, you know, those who sliver in the dark. Did I say sliver? Those who slither in the dark. Sliver is a creature type in Magic the Gathering. But if you have no connection to the main bad guys, why is your story in the game? It's just a complete non sequitur that, yeah, it was fun to play through, but it served no purpose. Dimitri's pained. Who cares?
Additionally, it's never good when you have 3 different stories and none of them have there's no unified ending. The ending changes based on whoever you're using, which means there is no actual story. It's almost like a choose your own adventure. Excuse me. And that was mildly frustrating when Fire Emblem Fates did it. And it was, it's annoying to us to hear people talk about the game like that, where they're like, Fire Emblem Three Houses had a great story. As Vince, you put it one time, there were, what'd you call them? Magical cruise missiles.
Yeah, there were magical cruise missiles that you only see on, I think, two routes. I don't even remember. I think in the Edelgard route, it just happens off screen and they talk about it. It's like, okay, what blew up this place again? It just wiped the whole thing out? Weird. And then I think on Verdant Wind, you actually see the magical cruise missiles. But the only route you even... I could go on about this for a while. I'm sorry.
So I think one of our issues is... because even though we are games journalists, we do this day in, day out. Vince has been with this company for a while. I have been here for at least 13 years. We were not games journalists who picked up gaming. We were who picked up journalism. So to see just really bad takes, and this is not a Fire Emblem exclusive. I've seen a lot of really bad review takes for Harry Potter, but we're not, those are outside of scope of this episode, unfortunately. To argue that because a game kind of went back to its roots, even though it is still beautiful, it is functional, and it is a lot like Awakening was, which was the game that saved the series. And to be like, I don't know. I wanted it to be more like anime visual novel. And I'm dinging points because I want it to be visual novel, even though it has never been a visual novel. It's a disservice to just fair reviewing. And already a lot of people don't trust game reviews because of how many scandals the industry's had with bot reviews. And for a series like Fire Emblem, it feels really disingenuous to pick the one exception and go, oh, I don't know why every other game isn't like this one. It's because it's never been like that. Three Houses was unique in its own way, but far from perfect, and very much you felt like they were out of their depths, like with the story room, and just they were so focused on trying to put together this grand game that they rushed through other parts of it.
I think part of what happened with Three Houses was they ran out of money, because like there was no explanation given as to why Byleth just disappeared for 5 years. The only explanation was they were asleep, and anything else that can be said is pure headcanon, because the game doesn't say anything beyond that. They literally skip over it in all of the routes. Like, I don't have a great memory, but I remember that being really annoying. And like, there were some Fire Emblem games that had pretty decent stories. Like, because I started with Blazing Sword, which was the first one on the GBA. And I played Sacred Stones, and I'm like, this game is too easy. So then people were like, okay, go back, play Thracia. And I'm like, what is Thracia? So I go and I play Thracia 776, and that game is BS, and it hates you as much as you hate it. But I cleared it. I don't remember much of its story, but I went back and played Genealogy of the Holy War and was actually quite impressed, because I thought that that one had a pretty decent storyline overall in comparison to what I had played up to that point. Path of Radiant story isn't that bad. Radiant Dawn isn't horrible, but like Act 2 is clearly the best and most developed portion of the game. Because Act 3 just kind of throws it all out, and they're like, oh yeah, there's an evil goddess. You know, go do your thing. So, the games haven't exactly been known for story, because out of the 16, 17, I don't actually know how many of them there are. I kind of lost track of numbering them around when Awakening came out.
Yeah, well, it doesn't help that only some of them are Japan exclusive even today.
Yeah, I remember specifically that 12 was Japanese exclusive, so that makes Awakening 13. So I guess Engage is the 16th one right now. But and it was still weird that they took New Mystery of the Emblem and made it Japanese exclusive. Apparently Chris isn't anything to write home about, but I still would have preferred to experience that without having to like use a translation guide, because the at the time that I had played it, the translation patch was not available. I don't even know if there is one available for it still. Beats me. But Three Houses was clearly an exception in terms of just the sheer amount of dialogue that they throw at the player. But don't confuse voluminous dialogue for actually being a great story. The plot itself is still pretty by the numbers. And truth be told, like, Edelgard being a, you know, gray-colored villain is a nice idea, but they didn't fully commit to it in any of the routes. They didn't even offer a golden route that would, you know, kind of wrap everything up with a bow. And no matter which route you play, there's still some things that just aren't answered, and then character actions that don't make sense. Like, okay, Dimitri's brain damaged or really depressed and has schizophrenia, or why did he show up as a force ghost in, I think, the Golden Deer route? He offered nothing there. He just showed up because they're like, oh, we have to throw him into this route real quick. So, I don't know, he's Obi-Wan Kenobi now. They just do things. So don't confuse just things being done as a fantastic story. And I'm not going to defend Engage's plot, by the way. It's very by the numbers and towards the, I'm going to say like 60 to 70% through mark, they actually start taking the story seriously, which drags it down a few points in my book, just because it wasn't a story meant to be taken seriously. Like, it's still cool when you have Alir lined up with all of the past protagonists in a line. That's really cool, great moment. But all I know that I'm just going to stack a whole bunch of my units together, do a whole bunch of dancing, and then one round that dude. I know I'm going to kill the final boss that way.
For me, the one thing I really appreciated about Engage is I love Sacred Stones. I love the characters in it. I'm not saying it's the best Fire Emblem, because Blazing Sword was really good. Binding Blade was really good. Awakening was really good. But for me, Sacred Stones was my first Fire Emblem, and I've beat it so many times. And to most of the time, like, whenever games get brought in, like for the first Fire Emblem Heroes, and they're bringing back all these past characters, I knew no one from Sacred Stones was going to get brought in, because it's always Marth and some of them, some of the people from Awakening. Like, it's always like two or three different games. Lynn.
Dude, Brave Erica is one of the best units in Heroes, from what I understand.
Oh, am I thinking of Heroes? The Dynasty Warriors one?
Oh, you're thinking Warriors.
Warriors. Yes, I meant Warriors. My apologies. But yeah, I knew, like, when Warriors came out, like, no one from Sacred Stones was going to be in there. Heroes is different. Heroes has literally everyone. But then to find out from you, actually, that Erica and Ephraim, the two lords from Sacred Stones, are in this game as a ring, made me happy, because for me, that is literally Fire Emblem acknowledging, yes, we made Sacred Stones. Yes, it's part of canon. We're not going to Castlevania 64 it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had to have something if they're doing one from each previous major game, you know? They're not going to leave out one game in particular when they're adding Micaiah.
Well, I just, you know what I mean, though, by Castlevania 64-ing it, right?
I don't know. Throwing a giant skeleton that sucks at you? I have no idea what you mean by that.
So, initially, the character was going to be Schneider Belmont, in the long line of Belmonts, but then they decided near the end to not make it canon, and they changed it to Reinhardt Schneider. So they just pretty much, near the end, just kind of, it's almost retconned it, saying, oh yeah, that's actually not a Belmont. This is actually not canon with all the other Castlevania stories.
I mean, it's fair. Like, if you've played through it, you definitely aren't going to care.
Yeah, so
this cat will not stop making noise. What on earth?
It's our mascot. He's giving his opinions. But yeah, that was always my feeling, though, outside of Heroes, was like Fire Emblem took great pains to ignore Sacred Stones. Because there were a lot of good characters in there that could have been brought into Warriors. Either of the twins would have been great. Seth would have been awesome.
Well, no, they're absolutely not going to do that when the first Warriors game was just supposed to exclusively be like Awakening characters and Fates characters. That's all they really wanted to do. Lynn was an exception because she was the most popular Lord like the series had ever had. And like, it doesn't matter that it's, you know, against Sacred Stones. It was against everything.
Well, I mean, they also brought in Navarre.
Oh, it was first Fire Emblem because they had Celica. Yeah,
Minerva.
It was the first Fire Emblem, Awakening, and Fates. That's what they did in that particular one. Because, you know, they had Marth and all them too. But the reason Lynn was in was because she was super popular. And the reason Celica, which I don't even remember if she was base game or not, but it doesn't matter. The reason Celica was in was because Echoes had just released. So, like, if Sacred Stones had just released at the same time instead of Echoes, they would have had Erica or Ephraim. Well, it probably would have been Erica, because, I don't know, for some reason they picked the female character. But,
although Engage also did something that made me happy, too, even though it's DLC, which... Is it paid DLC?
For what, the additional rings? Like, yeah. Hector? Yeah, they're part of, like, the season pass or whatever.
But at the very least, they brought Hector back, because that was... you and I from that game, because Lynn is the most popular, but I know you're a big fan of Elwood, and I like Hector. My literal in-game strategy in that game was Hector Smash. And to be
well,
able
yeah,
to
as
see...
long as you're not on Hector hard mode, that is a good strategy.
but to see Hector, Erica, and Ephraim getting recognition makes me really happy, because I feel like it's been too long. So I'm really high on Engage, and I know a lot of these other game reviewers are having their I don't even want to call them well thought out opinions, but their thoughts put on paper for the internet for people to read makes me kind of frustrated as a Fire Emblem fan, because I feel like more people would like this, but they're going to read that and be like, oh, you know, they say it's really bad. I was on the fence because I only played three houses, so I'm not going to pick it up.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of what's in Engage is fan service of the best degree. Like, there's multiple different kinds of fan service. Sometimes when people say it, they mean, like, you know, bouncing boobs and butt shots. That is not what Engage offers. They instead appeal to fans who actually know who Marth and Sigurd are. They appeal to fans who, you know, they played through Ike's adventure, and they know how much of a badass he is, and how much of a... I guess gay while also being not gay. And they even lampshade that in some of his conversations. It's really funny. Like, Goldmary and Ike's first bond conversation is one of the best things in the game. Because Goldmary's like, oh, I apologize if my charm is too much for you. And he's like, please tell me that not everyone in your country speaks like that. It is fantastic. They had a lot of fun with it. But you only get a lot out of it if you know who Ike, Erica, Celica, if you know who these characters are. And if you've only played three houses, you only know Byleth. And Byleth comes... I don't even remember when you get the Byleth ring. But Byleth is a portion of the way into the story rather than being front and center. For, you know... probably balance reasons, because he has Goddess Dance, and that lets you, you know, give four turns back to your characters at once, which is absolutely amazing.
For me, the one I had to look up, just because I never had a Wii, and I still have never played it, is Micaiah.
It's the personality they have for Micaiah in Engage is actually the personality of her character in Japan. Whenever you play through Radiant Dawn, which, again, my copy is available if you'd like to play it, the English translators had a lot more fun with her than the Japanese script did. She was very much a plain Jane, oh, I don't want to do this, but I have to character. Whereas in the North American translation, she has a particular line where someone is talking about Ike. And in Japanese, she's like, oh, Ike, the hero of blah, blah, blah. But in English, she's like, oh, Ike, the quote unquote hero of whatever. The something of something and the father of Ike, or father of Soth's children. And it's hilarious because Soth is basically her boyfriend. So she's insulting Ike by tearing down what he is, but she never really does that. Like, the North American translation gave her a lot more sass than what her character actually had, and engages more faithful to her original interpretation in the Japanese release. But hey, she's a busted healer who gives an additional, like, plus one range to staves, so you can warp four characters at once, or rewarp five characters five spaces away, making her especially broken. One of the best emblems in the game. You'll love using her. And actually, that flexibility in building your team and deciding, like, which emblems go to which character is probably the best part of Engage. So I hope you don't mind if I, like, segue away from story into gameplay mechanics.
Do it.
Because Engage is probably the best game for unit viability that the series has literally ever had. I would say one of the worst games for unit availability was Radiant Dawn. Well, okay, Radiant Dawn introduced availability as a concept, because you start with the Dawn Brigade, you switch to Alencia, you switch to Ike, and when you get the Dawn Brigade back, they might be horribly underleveled. And that's just what Radiant Dawn does. However, in Engage, most of your characters are going to wind up viable because of all the bonuses that they can get. While in Radiant Dawn, a lot of your characters are just useless the moment you get them, so you meet shield them for a little bit and then just move on. And I don't know why they designed the game that way. The game was imbalanced as hell. It's a lot of fun, but it's super imbalanced when it comes to, like, unit viability and stuff like that. But when we come to Engage, like, Clan, he starts off with 10% magic growth in a mage class, which is terrible. Now, you have to add the growth for the class itself to whatever he has as a character, but 10% just won't cut it when you have, like, Citrine and Ivy, who are going to get way more magic growth per level. So you can second seal Clan out of that class into something that uses more melee weapons, and then every so often, you know, give him 11 swords so that way he can do decent damage on things that have high defense but low resistance. Or Anna, for example, who has the highest magic growth in the game, starts as an axe fighter, and the only magical axe weapon is god-awful. So the best thing to do with her is probably to either promote her into a warrior so she can use radiant bows, or, you know, promote her into a magic class by getting a proficiency from an emblem. And, like, the emblems give you the proficiencies you need to move into other classes, which, again, fantastic system. The only thing that makes it weird is that instead of having unit availability, you have emblem availability. So, you know, if you want Anna to be a mage, absolutely make sure that you do all of what you need with her before chapter 10. And that's the only spoiler I'm going to give you.
Anna as in the merchant Anna?
Yes, Anna is a playable character in this one. She's been playable a few times before, and, you know, generally speaking, each time she's been great. But yeah, she shows up in every single Fire Emblem game.
Yeah, but never seen her as an axe fighter before. Normally you see her as like a thief.
Like a thief,
yeah. Rogue. Trickster's been another class, I think.
Yeah, you can move her into Thief pretty easily, because I think you also get the emblem that gives knife proficiencies. like right off the bat, like around the same time you get her. But her magic growth is ridiculous, and not using it would be, you know, just a terrible option. So you need to move her into something that uses swords so she can use 11 sword. Or, you know, I gave her a tome proficiency so I could make her a mage knight, and she turned out pretty great. The only issue with magic classes in Engage is if you're going to do the really hard trial maps that unlock after you beat the game, magic characters have they have much lower base speed, or not base, cap speed. So, like, most mages will cap their speed between, like, 32 and 34, whereas, like, a hero might be able to get that into the high 30s, and really fast classes will have, like, low to mid 40s, which, you know, you don't want your mage unit getting doubled. So right. you kind of go with whatever you can get. But, like, generally speaking, there is a class that each character can contribute in, and you can always give them an emblem that shores up their weaknesses. Like, I wound up on my first playthrough on hard using apparently a large number of characters that are considered bad. So, like, Etie is considered a bad character. She's the first archer you get. Well, technically speaking, if you go by, like, average level ups, she'll have, like, 3 or 4 more points of strength and be, like, 2 or 3 points of speed behind Alchrist, which is an archer you get, like, in a couple of chapters later. So it depends on what you're going to value, I guess. But, you know, if you have a particularly blessed Etie that you moved into Bow Knight, she might just spend the entire game shooting down wyverns and pegasi for you, and you're not having too much of an issue with her. And a lot of units are, their speed is going to be lowered because they're using weapons that are too heavy for them due to the build stat. And the build stat coming back is one of the best things they've done. That's the same as, like, Constitution from Blazing Sword and Sacred Stones. So if your build stat is, like, 5 and you use a weapon that weighs 8, you're going to be losing 3 on your speed. So some characters are balanced by their build, and some are carried by their build. I think the first axe fighter you get, like, storyline-wise, without having to go to a paralogue, is a guy who only has, like, 25% strength, but he has, like, a 50% speed growth, which is kind of nutty. But his build stat will be incredible by end game, so you can just continue using him and giving him heavier and heavier and heavier axes, and he won't lose any speed, so he'll just be doubling. He'll miss a lot, but hey, you could give him bigger and better axes. Just don't put him in the Berserker class. Using an S rank axe isn't worth it.
So, I guess to wrap this up, this is us kind of also evangelizing Fire Emblem Engage, because, guys, it's an awesome game. And Vince,
it's really good.
Vince is going to have a review out sometime in the near future for it.
Oh, but I've actually also already submitted my review, so it might be up on the site by the time this goes live.
Yeah, fair enough. Even better. But at the end of the day, sure, people like us want you to listen to our thoughts, and we love trying to give advice and thoughts in good faith. But at the end of the day, it's, you want to do your own research on a game and not listen to someone from Wired or Kotaku and make a decision off of that just because some writers don't write in good faith.
Well, and a lot of them can be, I guess, misleading, because we've played a lot of the games, so we have this experience with the past ones. And this, I'm not trying to make this sound gatekeeping, but not every game can be the same as the first one that you ever played in a series. Like, there doesn't need to be a contingent of fans who are like, we want three houses, like how people who may have started with Sonic 3 viewed Sonic Adventure, that kind of thing. There's room for both, and for both to flourish. And, if I could say one more thing about Engage that I really, really liked, the combat animations. The animations in Engage are the best that they have been since the GBA games. Like, you can put a character in the warrior class and get a crit, and they will do the crit animation in full 3D of a hero from the GBA games. The only thing that it's missing is a general throwing an axe and reeling it back in with a chain. They even took topography into account for a lot of the animations. So if on the map, your character is at like the top of a staircase wielding a spear, they'll be at the top of the staircase in the battle scene too, and they'll do a completely unique attack animation on the foe sliding down the staircase. It's amazing all of the little touches that they put in that just help sell what's happening and how like powerful the characters that you're playing as are. And I just thought that was really great, especially after multiple iterations of 3D games missing the mark, in my opinion.
And for those unaware, the hero crit, they take their weapon, or in the hero's case, on the GB, the Game Boy Advance games, a shield. They throw it high in the air, they jump up, catch it, flip, and then come down on top of the enemy. It's the Game Boy Advance games had really great animation, which every time you saw it, it made you happy because you definitely know, oh, I got a crit. I'm actually replaying Path of Radiance, and there was one where I just saw him go, like, make like one little tiny body movement, and then bam, crit. But I think it was an archer, just spun an arrow and shot. But I remember on Sacred Stones, the archer would like lean back a little bit and look like she's gauging her distance. Then she'd spin the arrow, pull and fire. And it was, the animations were just so unique per class. And they did kind of lose that during the 3D era.
Yeah, and like the crit animations for warriors, the crit animations for paladins especially, because they like jump in the air. The horse charges, they jump off the horse, and then just stab the enemy, and then climb back on the horse. It's so funny because they like slingshot themselves off the horse like a bullet. They really wanted to sell to you that these characters are powerful and that this isn't real life. And I think that that helps because it makes your crits more bombastic. You could probably look up any video related to Engage and you'll find something about Panette being a crit machine. And like the combination of quotes, the zoom-ins that they do on the character, it's not just like a cut-in of their eyes anymore, like what they used to do on the 3DS games. It's a lot more dynamic. The camera will zoom in and zoom out to give you kind of a better idea of just how ridiculously damaging your character is. Or in like Axe Fighter's cases, they'll break up the ground underneath where they hit. It does a lot towards selling, you know, just how much damage your character is capable of dealing. Though in some cases, your character might crit and deal 2 damage. Yunaka the Thief Gang. I guess so, it'd be 3 damage because it triples it. My bad.
So yeah, guys, we are glad to be back with you. We're going to try to make this as regular as possible. As always, check out our previous podcasts. You can hear them on your favorite podcast platforms. Come to GameIndustry.com. We have articles. Vince has a column. I occasionally guest write a column and lots of reviews, lots of editorials. And with your readership and viewership, we are able to do more options, go to more conventions. And we would love to be able to do that. So, and we just want to hear your opinions as well, because at the end of the day, you know, you guys may know something we don't, we may have missed something, or you just may want to share your fun stories from Engage or Three Houses or any of the old ones. And definitely feel free to reach out to the website and we would love to hear your opinions.
Yeah, if you think my opinions suck, come to the website and tell me and I will argue with you personally. I guarantee it. I won't just ignore you. I might just ignore them.
All right, guys. Thank you and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Peace.